Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 3, Episode 17. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh. Dave, here we are, 2 weeks in. There are, after tonight's game, 20 teams 1-1. And with the 27-10 victory from the over the Jets yesterday at Heinz Field in the Steelers' home opener, the Steelers are one of those teams.
Yeah, how's the lines at the bridge today?
Less. The Pirate fans are, yeah, are stat 10 deep.
And the Pens fans, too, with the lockout, right?
Yeah, and the Pitt fans walked away from the bridge. It's a revolving door.
Plenty of ropes, I'm sure. But, it was a good win yesterday. Now, we got to kind of frame that a little bit. I mean, let's face it. Going into this game, we knew that the Jets' big win against Buffalo, had some question marks surrounding it. They got a punt return in that game. The defense played great. The Jets were handicapped in this game and even said as much heading into this. Without the services of Darrell Revis, without their tight end Dustin Keller, without Brian Thomas, the linebacker, even though the Steelers were without James Harrison and Troy Polamalu in this game, this slanted severely in the favor of the Steelers, especially playing at home. And it's a win nonetheless, and every win in the NFL is important, especially how the second half shaked out, which we'll get into there in a little bit. But a lot to be thankful for and a lot to work on.
Yeah, and let's talk about first things first. Let's get all this injury stuff out of the way. Tomlin was asked directly, didn't comment on injuries. That's not that doesn't mean there weren't any, but it really looks like the Steelers may have walked out of this game with nothing other than, you know, Larry Foote banging up a foot or an ankle and a stinger to Ryan Clark. Didn't see anybody who left the game and didn't return, and didn't see anybody kind of need assistance to get off the field. So generally pretty good, right?
That's what I'm understanding. He really didn't address it at all. I don't think he was asked about injuries either after the game. So we'll have to wait till tomorrow being Tuesday and see what kind of tidbits he throws out there. But, you know, last week during the Tuesday press conference, he said got good news about James Harrison. Yeah. And, of course, you know, he didn't work all week. And then said Troy Polamalu is going to be limited in the first part of the week. And then, of course, he didn't go all week. So
maybe the head coach doesn't exactly have his finger on the pulse of the training room.
Now, you know, you just have to watch the injury report day by day. And, you know, luckily I've learned how to read the tea leaves as far as participation levels go. And, you know, I've been right on the money of my inactive list for 2 weeks in a row. That's rare for me to start the season on. So I guess my Tomlin ease is kind of getting good and far, you know, as far as that goes. But, you know, with the bye week, David, right around the corner now, we travel out to Oakland. And I just wrote about this. You don't want to take any team in the NFL lightly. I mean, look what happened yesterday with the Arizona Cardinals and the New England Patriots there. But, you know, the Oakland did beat the Steelers the last time these two teams faced. It was a game the Steelers should have won fairly easily. Bruce Gronkowski was the winning quarterback in that game in 2009 there. But, you know, that being said, you might have a different opinion on this. I think leave Harrison, leave Troy, and leave Rashard Mendenhall on the sideline one more week, and then, you know, you'll have the bye week after that. Then the Steelers come back home to face the Philadelphia Eagles in week 5.
It'll be interesting to see. I've got to think, if you were going to rank the probabilities, Troy's probably a high probability. Harrison's probably mid to low, and I'd say Rashard is unlikely. So that's kind of how, if I were just guessing going in, of course, that's all we're doing is guessing, but that's how I would look at things as the Steelers prepare for Oakland. But let's focus on what happened yesterday at Heinz Field. And, Dave, the Steelers came out with a 27-10 lead, but let's kind of look at early in this game. The Steelers get the ball, and they drive down for a field goal, But certainly you look at it, and on their first running play, Redmond loses 7 yards. He gains a yard in another running play in the series, and on next to the last running play, he loses 3 yards. The Steelers got it down the field, but it certainly was no thanks to the running game early.
Boy, 10 plays to have hardly any success on the ground. 53-yard drive, I think. 3 first downs on a drive. Thank you, Mr. Ben Roethlisberger. Ended up with a field goal there. You know, I wrote about, we'll get into this here this morning, and this is 2 games now that, you know, that we have seen this. And I wrote about it last week as well, too. The Steelers have got to start running the ball better on early downs. No, I'm not saying you have to get out there every first and second down and run the ball, but when you make the decision to run, I mean, let's face it here, on first down right now through 2 games, averaging 3.14 yards per carry, on second down averaging 2.38 yards per carry. Believe it or not, that's not the worst in the league, but, you know, we talk about, you know, the big buzzword I like to use this year, especially, you know, against Peyton Manning and you know, coming out of that game, is staying ahead of the chains and staying in manageable situations. Now, thank God Ben Roethlisberger is such a good third down quarterback. As a matter of fact, went 8 of 10 yesterday for a buck, I think, buck 40-something. Had the touchdown, had a superior passer rating, 140-point-something in that. Sooner or later, you're going to get yourself in a situation, though, where, you know, you can't keep asking him to bail the team out like that. Staying in manageable down and distance is going to be crucial going forward, especially when you're playing some of these better teams here. So, you know, my line report last week was not awful. It definitely could have been better. The tight end play was not great blocking-wise last week. I expect that I'm going to see some breakdowns on the interior of the line this week. I really didn't think Cologne, Pouncey, or Ramon Foster had a great game on the first visuals through. But they've got to get this stuff straight because, you know, like I said, you've got to stay in manageable second and third down situations moving forward out of this win.
Yeah, no doubt, Dave. And just big picture, if we're going to talk about this team and what, you know, not wanting to get too down when they lose to Denver and not getting too high when they beat the Jets, the couple things that I want to just say is offensively, this has been Ben and the wide receivers. It's Ben and, you know, we'll think of a cute group name for the band of Ben and the receivers. But the offensive line has not done a good job. And, you know, I haven't gone through the film again, so I don't want to be too critical here, but it's not only are they not effective running the ball, the 66 yards on 28 carries speaks for itself, 9 of that coming on an end around to an Antonio Brown. So basically the backs average 2 yards a carry. And we talk about the negative yard plays where they had 7 yard loss and a 6 yard loss. That typically is on the blocking. So there are negatives there, but also Ben, 8 sacks through 2 games, and some of those sacks came at the end of the Denver game. So I'm willing to discount that a little bit, but even in these games where he's making these plays, he is not making these plays with a clean pocket. There are plenty of times while he's put up these good numbers, and he put up very good numbers yesterday, where it's a result of Ben sidestepping a guy, shaking a guy off, making the play himself, and getting the throw there. It is not Mark Sanchez last week against Buffalo standing in a clean pocket, stepping up and making a throw. Ben has not, certainly that has happened on occasion. I don't want to say it's never like that, but it is not happening as often as I certainly would like to see, and I'm sure Sean Kugler would like to see.
Well, especially when you're getting into some of these second and third down predictable pass situations, to me it goes back down to the production on first and second down, because if you're predictable on a second and long, you know, or a third and long, they're going to be able to tee off on you as well too, and that's that much longer the distance that the play has to develop. The receiver's got to get out into their routes as well. So, you know, all this goes hand in hand, and you know, thank God for Ben Roethlisberger, because that's the guy that should be having the praises sung about him today, not Todd Haley. You know, receivers, okay, yeah, because you got to have someone on the other end catching the ball there. The defense, I thought, played well, you know, especially in the second half of the game, but it's just amazing when you go through and you look at some of these drive charts, David, from this game, you know, yesterday, how they were still able to possess the ball despite not being able to run it. Now, 30-something of the yards on the ground even came on that. You got to give props here. That was 10-minute 13-second drive there in the fourth quarter was just a backbreaker. That was here it is, and that was 30-something of the 66 yards rushing the Steelers had in that game came on that drive. So that just prefaces how bad the running game was up until that point as well, too. So, you know, how in the heck they were able to hold on to the ball for, 36 minutes and 36 seconds in that game yesterday is just totally amazing. And it all falls back on the ability of Ben Roethlisberger. And as much as I think Byron Leftwich is a capable backup quarterback, there's no way he makes some of those plays that Roethlisberger made in that game yesterday.
Oh, God, no. God, no, absolutely not. So the Steelers, and just staying kind of with the first half theme here, the Steelers offense, not overly effective. A couple drives that end up in field goals. We can say this, early returns on Sushi, very positive. Banks threw a couple 45-yarders, pretty good on the kickoffs again yesterday, Butler as well, a reasonably good game yesterday. But I want to get my man Sushi some credit here early in the podcast.
And absolutely he should. I'm glad I'm 100% wrong on him so far, and I hope it stays that way with him too, because the guy has been money with his attempts. Ball is going out of the end zone on these kickoffs, and, you know, that's one thing we were kind of worried about heading into this season a little bit was, you know, the special teams. But, you know, DeMarcus Van Dyke with another great play. That's two weeks in a row. This new kid has had an impact on the game. So
he earned his salary yesterday for the season in my book.
Oh, sure did. Boy, that 4.2 speed. I've got an animated GIF up on SteelersDepot.com of him just blazing down the field there. And he distracted Curly, you know, on that, and the Steelers turned around with the ball again, although they didn't score off of that. Those are things that you'd like to see. You get a turnover off that. I think that's two turnovers in a row via the fumble or whatnot right now that the Steelers have not come away with points from. But, hey, the Jets can't score on you if they don't have the ball in their own hands as long as you're not throwing a pick six or something. So, props to Sushi. Butler, I thought, has planted a couple of nice nine irons in there as well, too. So you have to be happy in regards to special teams and Amos Jones, especially the state of affairs as it looked like it was going to be a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and I'll just throw in one other point there, Dave, is the other one is Chris Rainey got a chance on the punt return. It looked like he might take it. He probably it felt like in the stadium he was a half step away from breaking it. So I think it was about a 14-yard punt return. Nice to see that. Not a lot of other stuff in the return game really to comment one way or the other. DeMarcus Van Dyke play, really good play. The push in the back, thank goodness the refs made the right call there. But he was flying down there, and on that play, they doubled Curtis Brown on the outside on one side and did not double Van Dyke on the other side. And he causes the fumble essentially by being down there so fast, and Ryan Mundy recovers, as you said. So, again, overall, the Steelers probably, I don't know that they won or lost the special teams game, but everybody who in that facet of the game did their job.
Absolutely. If we had to grade that, I would say a B+ to an A-, because it didn't kill you. And if things like that don't kill you and you get a turnover out of it, then, you know, it's got to be up there.
Yeah. So, Dave, let's go now I got to say, I wasn't all that comfortable with 10 minutes left in the second quarter because the Jets get the ball and they go right down the field. And not only that, this is a 90-yard drive where Mark Sanchez goes 4 for 5 for 80 yards. And so now you have the Steelers in their five most recent drives going – giving up 80-yard touchdown, 80-yard touchdown, 80-yard touchdown, 53 or so yards, ends up in a field goal where the other team takes the lead, and now 90-yard touchdown. So all of a sudden you're looking at five straight drives, about essentially 60 minutes of football, where they haven't even sniffed a stop, it felt like.
Absolutely. A couple of big things on that drive as well, too. You had the pass interference on.
And I will say that's a very good point, because that would have ended that drive right there.
Yeah, you had the pass interference on second down, to Ike Taylor there. You know, they would have been in a third and long situation right there. Now then on the very next play, Sanchez hits Curley for that. That was a great play design too. And then you kind of worried at that time because Curley had kind of split the seam. Sanchez had time on that play, little pump. Action and thank God for Lewis getting catching him from behind for the tackle, or else there's your touchdown there instead of having to wait a few plays later for Santonio Holmes to score his. And on that play that they ended up scoring with Santonio there, Ryan Clark, who you really kind of worried at the beginning of that game there because he fell for the play action on that play. Ike Taylor had coverage over the top, and he was expecting Ryan Clark to have it underneath. Clark left. You can clearly see this on the tape. I can't wait to watch this on the All 22 when it comes out Wednesday. But Clark leaves to bite on the play action, and poor Ike Taylor's just hung out to dry. Then up underneath there, and everybody's.
It's just Santonio does the little airplane move. Ike had no chance.
No chance. When you're expecting help underneath there, and your wingman, so to speak, excuse me, leaves you like that. He really had no shot on that. So yeah, the Steelers down 7-3. The good thing, at least at that point, is they were able to answer in some fashion. So the Steelers come back down on a 9-play 48-yard drive, and at least get the field goal there. Still not running the ball well. Had a third down completion for 18 yards. I think it was third and eight to Antonio Brown there, which was huge. I don't know what else to say outside of that drive. It stalled, but at least they came away with points. And then you're looking at a 7-6 score, and you're thinking, okay, if the defense can tighten up here, well, then we're looking pretty good.
And definitely that. But the question is, at that point in time, I don't know that you feel like the defense can tighten up. And then, Dave, the play that I just spent opened my radio show with this afternoon, and I want to talk about this. And it's a game changing play. And certainly, maybe Sanchez is going to say it wasn't that big a deal. But if you look at it on the first drive, he goes 4 for 5 for 80 yards. The Jets come out in their second drive and they run Sean Green twice. And it's worth noting that Sean Green got hurt with a head injury in the second quarter and didn't return. I don't know how much of an impact that would have had. I don't know. I thought the kid from Louisville, Rand Powell, ran reasonably well when he got the ball. I didn't notice a big difference, but it's worth noting that. On third down, on third and three, Sanchez, it looks like play action, or Sanchez rolls to the right, and you're not sure if he's going to run or pass because it looks like he might be able to run for the first down. And he gets close to the line of scrimmage, decides to throw the ball, and Lawrence Timmons unloads on him. Now, I want to be very clear about this. I think at the end of the day, having watched the replay a bunch of times, the refs probably made the right call. Having said that, I don't think there was any intent to injure by Timmons. He didn't launch himself. It's hard for me to find any fault with the way Timmons went after him because at the same time, I do think Sanchez ducked a little bit, and so Timmons got him high, and we know that there's a limited area where you can hit these quarterbacks. You can't hit them low. You want to come up because he might be throwing the ball, so he got him a little higher than he should have, but from that point on, Mark Sanchez was 6 for 22 with 58 yards, and he took one hell of a shot.
That was a big, big play. Not only did it keep, that was on third and three. It was an incomplete pass to Curley. It kept their drive alive. They were looking at going three and out right there. So not only did it keep it alive, but as you said, Sanchez wasn't the same after that. And then when you throw in a couple plays later, a defensive holding call on Ike Taylor, they're keeping their drive alive again. At least a lot of things happened in that drive, as you stated, because Sean Green got knocked out on that drive. A couple penalties there. Sanchez gets hit. And I'm with you. I don't think it was a malicious intent to injure, but we'll see what the league says about that.
I'm guessing he gets a fine, but I'm guessing, I just don't think it'll be. Look, if you get a fine these days, $15,000 seems like a low fine. So I'm kind of thinking that's where he's going to be.
And I think isn't it a la carte menu now? Isn't that $21,000 with that?
Oh, right. Is that what it is?
It might be. That's what they got. What's his name last week for in the game against?
Yeah, that's right. The kid.
Raheem Morris.
Raheem Morris, or not Raheem, but whatever it is, but yeah.
Yeah, Raheem Morris in the game with Denver, you know, on the hit.
Yeah, I thought he was the Bucks coach, but the former Buck coach. But yeah, the kid from Denver, yeah, he got 21,000, so that may be where we are these days.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll have to see, you know, how that plays out as far as the fine. But, hey, you know, it was, like you said, we don't know how big, you know, if Sanchez says it didn't make that, you know, big of a difference. I don't know.
I didn't actually hear him address it. Did you, Dave? I don't know that anybody asked him.
Oh, no, I thought you had heard that. No, I haven't.
No, I did not hear it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't hear it one way or the other.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard that. So it'll be interesting if he is asked about that. Surely somebody over the course of this week in the New York media will ask him about it.
Undoubtedly, he's going to get discussed. That's going to be discussed. So, Dave, the Steelers, but they survive. Well, what happened? That's the field goal on that drive, right?
Yeah, that ended with the field goal there. So they're up at that point, 10-6 at that time. Raheem Moore. I don't know where I'm getting the coach confused, but it was Raheem Moore, not Morse.
I don't know that many guys named Raheem whose last name starts Moore, so easily confused. So the Steelers down 10 to 6 there, and then they put together a really nice drive after they go out, the exchange of punts. It's like watching a Notre Dame or Penn State football game 30 years ago when we were kids. The teams exchange punts for picking up action in the middle of the second quarter. So, and the Steelers get the ball with 6:43 left, and they go down the field. And again, Dave, I talked about the opening drives of Redmond. The first two drives, Redmond was in there. On the third drive, the Steelers didn't get any points. Dwyer carried once for 2 yards. And on this drive where they got 7 points, he went 1-4, 6-1. So, again, this is the Ben Roethlisberger show.
Absolutely. And it was all, as I mentioned, all the way up until that back-breaking drive of the Steelers there late in the ball game there. Somehow he manages to keep this thing alive. Now, they were aided on the 2nd-and-6 pass to Emmanuel Sanders for 19 yards, where you get another personal foul tacked on it by LaRon Landry, who is just, boy, this guy lets his mouth, for someone who talks so much, man, this guy had a couple of knockout shots, I guess, last week against the Bills there, knocked Fred Jackson out of the game for the Bills and all like that. But you want to talk about a guy that to me is overrated, and that's LaRon Landry. But yeah, you know, that helped kept it alive there. And Roethlisberger, you can put it all on him there. You had the pass to Dwyer in there for 12 yards. What else you have in there, Sanders?
A huge play right after that after the 2 minute warning, Dwyer goes for a yard and then the short pass to Cotchery.
Oh, what a catch.
Where Bart Scott unloads on him, and it was a good solid hit. And Jericho Cotchery, I mean, the Steelers receivers, I have to give them great credit so far this year. They've taken some shots and they held on the ball. We'll talk about the one Antonio took later in the game, but this was a shot over the middle. It was a third down, so it was a big play. It's 3 points or 7 points. He held it, and then so they get a first down with 1:08 left. And I love the play call there for the touchdown to Heath. It's similar to the throw he should have made to Heath in the Denver game. Again, I'll say it for the 100th time. Ben made a mental mistake on that throw, not a physical mistake. The ball came out of the hands the way he wanted it to. This was a really nice, soft touch patch to Heath, and as you would expect, Heath in his good hands put it away for the Steelers' first touchdown.
Yeah, when he leaks out over there like that, I was calling for that on Twitter too. You know, when you know right now, now that Hines Ward is gone, Hines Ward was the money man in the red zone for all those years there. In fact, I did a post a little while ago talking about the Steelers' young money crew in the third down receptions since all of them have been drafted. And you know, Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders have combined to have two touchdowns between them on third downs dating back to the time they were drafted. So now that Hines Ward's not there, Heath Miller is going to be your guy until one of these young kids step up in the red zone here. So until teams start taking this away, Heath Miller is going to be your money man in the red zone. It was a great play call. Once again, I mean, 2 weeks in a row here, the touchdown by Miller last week, great play design, great play action on the play yesterday as well, too, if memory serves me correct, on the 1 yarder to Heath there. But yeah, the catch, the play that set that up to Cotri there with Jeremiah Bell and Bart Scott just crunching him there. What a key catch that was, because if you don't have that, you're kicking the field goal there and you're down, 10-9 at that point.
Yeah. So, absolutely. That's exactly the point. The Jets come out and decide not to do anything after that. I don't know. There are a lot of media types said they were surprised that the Jets didn't try to do anything there. I don't think it's a big deal. They ran twice for 2 yards. The first play, the Steelers do that all the time. They run on first down, maybe from a spread formation, to see what they get and then decide. You only have 57 seconds. He makes a bad throw or gets sacked. They're not in great shape. So I didn't have a problem with it, even though they had 2 timeouts. What were your thoughts?
It didn't surprise me. Rex is going to be conservative like that in that situation. It's too early for them to get Tebow into the game there, though. But it's hard to criticize them for that call. They get the ball in this, to start the second half. So there was no sense for them trying to be aggressive there.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the keys, getting the ball to start the second half. And again, this was a drive. Dave, let's get our officiating rant out of the way now. I think we're basically on the same page, and I think we're on the same page with virtually everybody else. A couple terrible pass interference calls on Ike, the first one that we talked about on the first drive, and then the one that comes up here later in the second half. I mean, it was an egregious call. I think the only benefit of it was once they made that call, they sure as hell weren't going to make one on the next 3 or 4 plays. Well, and Steelers linebackers and DBs had a chance to really go after the ball aggressively. There were some ticky-tack calls both ways. I think maybe the out-of-bounds hit on the Jets was a little shaky. But the reviewed calls they had gotten right, I think they respotting the ball they got right. Mike Wallace's touchdown, the guy did a good job in hindsight being right there. So as bad as a couple calls were, I mean, look, I wish they were getting them right. I wish they'd always get them right. But I don't know. I think there were a couple glaring errors, but I don't think it was maybe quite the disaster that some have made it out to be.
I don't know. There are a couple more things, and we don't want to spend too much time on this anyway. But Marcus Pouncey, they missed him double clutching on one. Luckily, Marquise gave him another one. A few snaps after that, and they called it there. I'm not sure what was up with the cadence there, but it was just poor. I mean, you have that many huddle. At least, they did huddle and they did get a few of these right. The spot on Mike Wallace, I think it was either Wallace or Sanders. It was Sanders. That was a generous spot there, and you knew that was going to be overturned. It's just sad that coaches have to use their challenges on these is the big thing. I'm okay with them getting the call eventually right, but when it's that glaring bad that it cost a coach a challenge to get something like that corrected, that's really, really where it's taken away a little bit, in my opinion, from the game strategy.
Yeah, so let's get into the second half here. Again, Sanchez completes, we know he only completed 6 passes the rest of the way after that first drive. He starts the half with a 7-yard gain. They go, Sean Green is still in the game here at the third quarter point, and he goes over the right side for 2 yards. And then he gains 2 more yards and then to get a first down. And they go from they go to the 31, but there's an offensive holding call in the next play. Green carries again, and I think this is the play that knocks him out on a tackle by Kiso McClendon for 2 yards. And then the Jets go, then they've got all sorts of with this when they started first and 20 from their 21, they're not able to do anything and have to punt. And he
was sacked on. Don't forget to give Lamar Woodley credit for his sack there.
That's correct. Yeah,
on that third down, that was a big sack there. But once again, you're talking about keeping a quarterback behind the chains there, albeit their own holding call hurt them here on this drive. That's the key thing. You keep quarterbacks not named Ben Roethlisberger behind the chains, you're going to have a good shot to pin your ears back on him. And I thought Woodley, this was not a great game by Woodley passing. I mean, rushing the quarterback, I thought it was good, overall. I thought he had his bright spots against the kid there at right tackle there. But that was a key sack there. Third and 16 play, they have to punt after that. And, the Steelers get the ball in fairly good field position and flip the field.
And, Dave, the Steelers This is the one that Chris Rainey just missed breaking, I thought, a 13-yard return to the 41. And this next drive, there's been some sound, and hopefully you heard it on my show. And if you didn't, you can go to the podcast and hear it. But the Steelers gain 2 yards on Dwyer, and then there's a penalty, a horse collar, where the Steelers get the big gain in the drive. They go from their 43 on 2nd and 8 to the 31, and they go incomplete to Cotchery, and then Dwyer loses 6 yards, and this is a real problem because now you've gone from 31 to the 37 and maybe taking yourself out of field goal range or even considering a field goal, and Ben throws it up for Mike Wallace. Couple things on this play. One is Ben talked about it afterward, and I give him great props. One of the things we've seen, Ben, the maturity of the man, is he has become a very good interview, and he gives you some insightful analysis when he's being asked questions. And he talks at length in this piece about saying, you know, you want your players to make plays. And I saw he and he was covered. They were running man for man on the sideline. And he went through what his thought process was. I saw he's got a guy with him. If I throw it down there, it's almost as good as a punt if they make the pick. And hopefully Mike can make the tackle. He said, you got to trust your guys to make plays sometimes. And I gave Mike a chance to go make a play, and he did. And then he goes on for about a minute. But it was really insightful. I thought it was showed some humility, not saying he made a great throw or anything like that. And we've seen a lot out of Ben the past 2 years. And Mike Wallace made a good catch. And let me just finish by saying, Rex Ryan said today he thought Crow, as he called him, Antonio Cromartie, had good coverage on Wallace until he drifted a little bit at the end. Well, Jesus Christ, I mean, the whole point is to cover him for the whole play, not until the ball actually gets there. They're 5 yards deep in the end zone, and Wallace stops dead and goes up and gets the ball. I don't know what Cromartie's doing, because there's no point in running when you're 5 yards deep in the end zone already. So a lot of credit to the Steelers for getting it done, but a huge negative for Cromartie on his defense.
Yeah, what's the worst thing that happens there? Intercepted in the end zone, and you know what? At best, he brings it out maybe, 15, 16 yards? It falls incomplete. You're punting on fourth down. So it was a great decision by Roethlisberger. And as you said, you know, giving Wallace the ability to at least make the play. I thought he adjusted great on the ball. I was worried that foot got in, but the more they ran that thing back, it was not, there was not enough evidence there to overturn that. I mean, the foot placement, very, very similar to the way they, although not on the toes, but the amount of grass in between was similar to the touchdown in the Super Bowl by Antonio Holmes. There couldn't have been about three or four blades of green grass in between there. But, Ben even didn't know. He said his job at that point, he sees touchdown. He walks over to the sideline and sees what Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich said. It was his exact words, though. And, he got the call. And Mike Wallace could have very easily quit on that play. He didn't. He went and fought for that ball, and it ended up being a big play. And ho-hum, 3rd and 16 turns into a 37-yard touchdown pass on third down. So,
and Mike Wallace now leads the NFL in touchdown receptions over 30 yards since the start of the 2009 season. That was his 16th, and he notched ahead of DeSean Jackson, who has 15. So good stuff there. That gave the Steelers some breathing room at 20-13. Mike Wallace did go make the play. And Dave, what are your thoughts at this point? Are you feeling like it's a done deal? Because I think at this point it became Tebow time.
Well, it was, what was it? Was it 20? No, we were 20-10 at that point. They only scored 10 points.
You said, oh, yeah, 30. What did I say? 20-30.
I was going to say, I missed a field goal, so did the referees there. I'm feeling good at this point. When you start looking at how they had done in coverage at that point, a lot of press stuff, playing real physical. In fact, Rex Ryan even praised the Steelers secondary in his post-game talk, talking about how well and how physical, the Steelers defenders played in this game. But, I did not understand, and maybe this is a sign that maybe they thought Sanchez wasn't right too, letting Tebow come out on first down to open up this next drive. Hey, if you don't have what's the old saying goes, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one.
You don't have any, yeah.
You don't have any. So, Tebow comes out there. He gets 22 yards. That fella right off the bat. But after that, they pretty much shut him down. from there. Sanchez comes in there mid-series, can't do anything. He punts, you know, they have to punt at that time. At that point of the ball game right there, I kind of felt that the Jets, you know, knew that they were over their heads.
Yeah, I the whole Tebow thing is baffling to me, I have to say. The guy here, a couple thoughts on this. First of all, he comes in and runs for 22 yards. That's impressive. They run for 12 yards on the next play. Then Sean Green, who I guess is still in the game as I'm looking at the play.
Yeah, he bounced in and out of the game, Green did.
He did, okay. So he goes around and he loses 6 yards. And so now Tebow's been in for three plays. They gain 22, gain 12, and lose six. And he comes out, and first of all, after his 22-yard run, he was as demonstrative and fired up as you could be, so good on him. I had no problem with that. But when he came off, it was kind of the same thing, a lot of the arm flexing, and I couldn't tell. And, of course, I was at the game, so I didn't also hear anybody's commentary or see close-ups. I couldn't tell if he was upset because it certainly looked like not necessarily that he's screaming at his coaches, but somebody could perceive it as him showing up as coaching staff and being annoyed by it, and I just didn't get it. And I see it. I saw a tweet from one of the beat writers today in New York who said he's never seen Rex Ryan as annoyed as he is today about all the questions he's getting about Tim Tebow. So this is going to have a life, as we expected. It's going to have a life that's more than it should be. But Dave, what was your reaction to his coming off the field and your thoughts about when he did and why he didn't come back?
I really didn't pay too much attention to it, Dave, until all this stuff has been kind of written after the game as far as that. I just don't understand it. Either if Sanchez is your quarterback, I'd never understood the whole trade for Tebow in the first place, to be honest with you. Especially with what they gave up for him, albeit, you know, I just don't understand the reasoning behind it. Now I know that Tony, their offensive coordinator there,
Sperano.
Yes, Sperano likes kind of running that wildcat and all. But you know what, Dick LeBeau really, even in his press conference talk with the media on, I think on Thursday, leading up to this game, they have. There's only so much you can do with kind of what Tebow can do. It's all a matter of defending at that point. It's not like they're going to pull out new wrinkles, in my opinion, on this. You either get the quarterback, you know, you have one guy takes the guy with the ball and the other guy watches the pitch man. I mean, how much more simpler can it be on this? And I think this, we have only, you know, thank God the Jets, you know, won big in that first week against the Bills. But wait till Santonio starts chirping his mouth here. You know, over the next couple weeks, because he's not getting the ball like he thinks that he should.
Well, he got 11 targets, dropped three, caught three. I mean, how many targets do you want to get?
Yeah, but that's not going to be good enough. He's going to want better targets and more of them until he gets his catches. I think they interviewed one of the beat reporters for the Jets, said McKnight, the kid McKnight for the Jets, really kind of rolled his eyes or whatnot, kind of went
well,
asked.
He said, what difference would it make if he had played more?
Yeah, well, I mean, that. Do you really want? I guess that's the truth. But if that's the case, then why is he in there? If you're getting that, if you're having guys kind of questioning that decision there at that point, saying, "Well, what good is it going to be if he plays or not?" That's not really what you want to kind of hear out of your team. So,
no question. The quote, you know, you can interpret that quote 20 different ways. Like, look, we weren't going to beat the Steelers today, no matter who played, or you
sure,
know,
how's the New York media going to interpret that?
Yeah, no. Clearly, they're all gonna fire a shot at something, and they get a lot to talk about. So, look, it's you just lost a game. You put a mic in somebody's face, and they say stuff. So, I don't take that stuff too seriously. I don't have a problem with them running the wildcat now and then, or what, if you want to call it the spread option or whatever people want to term they want to use. I don't think it's a big deal. It's just, I think Mark Sanchez is the quarterback we think he is, and that's why they got Tebow, because he's not an elite quarterback. He's not Ben Roethlisberger. Mike Greenberg was on today, and he really had some very effusive praise of Ben Roethlisberger, saying he's the most underrated player in this league. He's an elite quarterback, and we always talk about the elite quarterbacks, and we say Breeze and Brady and Manning and Ben, and he always kind of and kind of almost as an afterthought throw Ben in, and he said you know, if you want somebody to win a game, Ben is your guy. I mean, he's as good as any of these guys. You can't, you know, all the things we talk about with Ben. He said just because he doesn't throw for 4,000 or 5,000 yards, he's sometimes not in this conversation. But he said, you know, you want somebody to win a game. And Mike is a big Jets fan, so he's watching this game, and he's watching Ben sing almost, you know, I hate to say single-handedly. It's never single-handedly. But Ben being the primary reason the Steelers are winning this game. And you walk away and you feel that way when Ben plays that way. And that's why I felt in the Denver game that them having the ball with 3 minutes left, you almost expect that every time he's going to get it done. And, you know, a good job. And I just the Tebow thing, I just – they do things. They want to try things. I think it's – the fact that it's New York and it's the media that it is, and Tebow is the guy he is, it's gonna ramp this up, and it's going to make for entertainment for all of us from the outside as we watch it. It's just I did like Joe Bendel's comment during the week. If this guy's name was, you know, Howard Smith, and he didn't have all the trappings that Tebow has around him, you'd say he's a football player and he can do useful things. You like having him on your team. So, you know, and all the guys I talked to coming in, we talked to Mike Vaccaro, I talked to Bob Glauber, they all said the relationship seems good. There doesn't seem to be a lot of acrimony or anything like that. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But this is the first bump in the road. I'm just curious, when you go 22 yards and 12 yards on, you know, two of the three plays you're out there, why you didn't, you know, try it a little bit more.
Well, absolutely, and that's for something for the Jets to decide going forward here. So, I mean, it's going to blow up in their face. I just don't see the Jets competing in that division, if you ask me. I just don't think they have enough weapons there moving forward. I think the mess with Sanchez. Sanchez was the quarterback yesterday that we think he is, that he's capable of being, of making mistakes like that. He's just not consistent enough to be a primetime quarterback. Now, say what you will about the appearances in the AFC Championship game or whatnot, and you know, this guy is not a Super Bowl quarterback. You know, you can take the quarterback out of USC, but you can't take the USC out of the quarterback, in my opinion, when it comes to getting them to the big game and all. But, you know, after that drive there, they end up punting. The Jets do. The Steelers really don't do themselves any favors. Really go three and out there. That's when that measurement is that we talk about that took so long to get taken care of. I wonder how long that wait had to do with maybe Curley maybe losing some focus on the punt return, because that's the play right there where DeMarcus Van Dyke just screams down the right side there and causes the muck there, and all of a sudden the Steelers are back in business again at the Jets 42.
Yeah, the Steelers are back in business, and unfortunately, nothing happens there as Rainey goes up the middle for four, incomplete pass to Rainey, and I didn't see this, but I guess Rainey got absolutely blistered by Kirby Wilson on the sideline for not catching that ball, because they felt like that could really have gone.
Rainey, I don't think, had a good game offensively. He didn't. I mean, there's no think about it. He really did not have a good game. I would like to see him flare him out more, David. You know, like in the situation on the Heath Miller touchdown last week against Denver. You know, we want, and we'll get to this in a minute with the personnel groupings that they used this week. They did exactly like I thought they would. They used less three wide receiver sets, and they used more of the 21 and the 22 personnel groupings with the two running backs on the field. The thing that was so intriguing about what the Heath Miller touchdown last week was how they flared out the backs, and there's so many different things you can do with that moving forward there, and why you want to just try to get Rainey kind of crumpled up in space there, kind of leaking out. And I know all this kind of stems back to that one that he took back to the house in what, the first or the second preseason game from left with your batch there. But, you know, that's not always going to work in tight quarters like that, especially if somebody's got a spy on him. Why not get the kid out in space? I also did not like the kind of the Statue of Liberty play. Yeah. That they had with him. I think that's we've seen Haley, I think, get a little bit too cute with these with a couple of play calls through the first two games. Trickeration's great when everything else is working good on top of it, in my opinion. Why not kind of let's focus on the basics first before we get into some of this other stuff, in my opinion. But yeah, they went nowhere on that drive. They weren't able to once again turn the turnover into points. And, had to punt. And the Jets at that point, though, were late in the third quarter with, about 3:19, and the Jets have the ball backed up to their 6-yard line thanks to the punt by Drew Butler.
Yeah, and they get the quick first down. They get the 13-yard gain, and then it's three and out. The Steelers have to use a timeout. Again, some of this stuff they need to do better. It's early in the season. We'll give them a little bit of a pass, but they burned some timeouts. They worried about Mike Wallace came on the field late when they wanted to go for it on fourth down instead of punting, and they got a delay of game penalty. They
were worried about Tebow as the up back on one of them, split out wide.
And that wasn't anything new, except that the Jets went with two wide on one side and one wide on the other, so they weren't prepared for the formation the Jets threw at them. That, I'm willing to give them a little bit of a pass there. I think they should have probably been ready for that, but that's okay. But, they did burn some timeouts that probably in a closer game you certainly would have liked to have had. But they punted to the Steelers, and the Steelers get the ball on the 49. And again, a situation where this is the Steelers did nothing here. This is two possessions deep in the Jets' territory where on this one they go straight backwards, holding on Gilbert, intentional grounding on Ben, by the way, which I thought was fine. It's a really fine line about drawing the tackle box. Ben did a great job of getting away from the initial rusher, and if he had taken one step to the side, I think he would have had all day. But obviously, in his mind, he saw somebody else right in front of him and decided to throw it away. The refs decided he wasn't out of the tackle box, so he gets the penalty. And a short pass to Antonio Brown gets blown up, and then they get a 25-yard gain to make it, fourth and six and punt it away.
Yeah, and on that third down play at that point right there, I think I even said on Twitter, just run the ball and punt, and I'll be damned if they don't get 25 yards of the 32 needed at that point. And I was like, well, okay, that'll work too. At least you got some more room there. But, the Marcus Gilbert holding call, I'm going to have to look closer at that. I thought that was kind of ticky-tack there on that holding call. And that, now the intentional grounding call, I'm with you. I thought that was the right call there. But once again, you back yourself in a hole on first down there on a holding call. You can't keep going to the well and keep asking Ben to bail you out of third and 20 or third and 30. There's no play in the playbook technically for that. It's just Ben backyard football at that point. But, they punt at that time. An offensive or a holding call on Will Allen at that time, and the Jets still have somewhat of a life. You're beginning the beginning of the fourth quarter. They have the ball on their own 20-yard lines to start things off. But another defensive pass interference call on Taylor there, and boy, that flag. I when he threw that thing, I thought, man, there's no way they could be flagging Ryan Clark for that hit on that play. I could not for the life of me see how a call could be that bad on an illegal hit, which it comes to find out it was just a phantom pass interference call on Ike Taylor there, who I liked his comments after the game, basically said, hey, I can't control that. I still got to just play. And he did at that point. But I think you're right, as you said earlier in the show, I think the refs knew that they owed a makeup call at that point. And I think the Steelers were able to get even a little bit more physical moving forward, later in the game from that point forward, because they had one in the bag, so to speak. But luckily that pass interference call didn't cost them, because, Sanchez really was under a lot of duress, I thought, at that time. Pressure-wise, and was incompleting a lot of passes. They have to punt the ball back to the Steelers, and the Steelers get the ball. 13:47 left in the fourth quarter at their own 25, and here comes the back-breaking drive.
Yeah, Dave, I'll leave it to you to describe it. I mean, no big plays, but just grinding out first downs and grinding clock.
Yeah, exactly. That was the best running they had done on the day. I think it was, like I mentioned at the top of the show, 31 yards rushing on that drive of the 66 they had all day. We saw Redmond go for 10 on there. I think Dwyer bounced a nice one outside during the drive. A lot of people forget Ben was halfway through that drive, sacked on a first and 10 on that. And then you have a pouncy fault starting. Ho-hum, second and 18 from the Steelers 47, and Ben hits Redmond for 14 yards, a key play on that drive, turns around next play to Antonio Brown for 9 yards with LaRon Landry on him, and here they are back in business, first and 10 at the Jets 30, and you know, what can you say from there on out? I mean, yeah, God, that what a nice back shoulder throw to Heath Miller on the third and three there. That you want to talk about a solid throw and a solid catch in a situation, a key part of the game there. Great toss and catch right there. Dwyer goes down two more carries, and then Redmond was not going to be denied. I'd listen to his comments after the game there. Ben was even telling him to go down, and Redmond would not quit on that and takes an in-off right tackle for a two-yard touchdown. And after that, I mean, when you look at that drive, 14 plays, 75 yards, there's one penalty in there, 10-13 off the clock there. Just an incredible drive. Great, you know, the best running of the game the Steelers had in there. And, of course, Roethlisberger making plays.
Yeah. That was it. They got it done. As you said, there's one play in there, the holding call on the defense on Jeremiah Bell on the pass to Heath. That was a big one. The pass to Antonio Brown where he got drilled. Another big catch. That was a 9-yard gain on a third and four. So the Steelers, you know, they came up with big plays on this drive, but not big yardage plays. They came up with big plays in third down, and guys, you know, who you count on got it done. And we just pointed them out, and they're really the Antonio Brown and Heath Miller catches, really solid catches there, and Redmond taking it in for the score. So good stuff all around, Dave. Even thinking more about Sanchez finishing 6-for-22 for 58 yards, I'm just adding up the yardage he got in garbage time after that. And he had a 26-yarder. Let me make sure I got to my right drive here. They had an 11-yarder, and then he had a 22-yarder, and then he had a 3-yarder. So he's got 36 yards out of his 58 in that last drive. So in that whole interim period from the Timmons hit till that last drive, he threw for 22 yards.
Yeah, and you know the Jets only had two. They had three explosive plays on the day. One of them was a 22-yard run by Tebow there. So we talk about the talk stat all the time and limiting explosive plays and getting turnovers. The Steelers won both of those columns in the game there, and you know Roethlisberger. The Steelers as a whole, I think, had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 explosive plays in the game. The Jets had 3, so you're up 2 there. You add in the turnover via the muff punt. They were +3 in the talk stat, and anytime a team is +2 or better in the talk stat, that equates to a win 80% of the time. So
is the play is the explosive play on offense more than 20 yards?
Yes, that's explosive play is considered 20 yards or more.
Because one of those happened with 28 seconds left for the Jets, so that's even a little more
insignificant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, Dave. Couple general thoughts here before we wrap things up. This field looked in better shape than we've seen it in a while.
I think those Sushi said. I think Craig Wolfley, you talked to him before the game, and Sushi was worried that the grass was moving a little bit though. So that this is going to be a constant thing. It's going to get worse as the year goes on. The colder it gets. And all, but I mean, overall, I didn't for one see the chunks out of it that we had seen kind of in some past games. But you know, hold tight, it's going to get worse.
Steelers played. We saw a scheme we never seen or almost never seen. A little 4-2-5 with taking the two outside linebackers off the field. That was a new thing.
Yeah, I like that. And Alan Gifford already pre-charting some stuff, you know, said, hey, you got to look at this closer when you go back through again. That was great. You had your defensive ends in Kiesel out there, I believe, Ziggy on the other end. You had a combination of Casey Hampton and McClendon in there at times. I think
Ziggy moved inside at times as well.
Yeah, so we'll have to look at those four or five plays, But, yeah, you get some snaps off the field for your outside linebackers. You put the extra defensive back on the field, the extra few defensive backs on the field at that time there because you're running your two safeties, your three corners, you know, from there. So, yeah, you know, Dick LeBeau's never afraid to throw something at you different. And the best thing about it, and I asked Alan about this, I said, on those plays, did they get good pressure on Sanchez? And he said, yeah. So that's the key there. They didn't know where the pressure was coming from. They weren't prepared for that. And props to Dick LeBeau.
And then two other points. I would say defensively, we talked about the offense and who looked good from our early perspective and who didn't. Defensively, to me, it was Ryan Clark and Larry Foote were the two guys outstanding. And Woodley made it. He got a sack. He had another play where he got the hand on the ball on Tebow and got on Sanchez and got pressure and made him throw the ball away. But still, I'd like to see more from the defensive side. I don't know that anybody else really stood out in my mind. Anybody stand out? Well, I will say I think Ike, as the game went on, a good job as well. But anybody stand out for you that I might have overlooked?
Did you say Ryan Clark? Ryan Clark.
I did. Ryan Clark and Larry Foote, the two who definitely stood out.
Yeah, they had great games. I thought Mundy played a good game in there as well, too, coming up to make some tackles. I believe he had five total on the day. Timmons, boy, he sure flies through some of these holes, but he sure misses some tackles sometimes.
He does, and I know exactly what you're thinking about and referring to. There were a couple yesterday. It's frustrating because he gets through there and he just only seems to get one arm wrapped around and never seems to bring him down.
Yeah, he's got to keep his body. We saw Stevenson Sylvester have problems with this during the preseason. It's been one of the knocks on him, in his couple years in Pittsburgh, albeit he's had just limited playing time. Mostly it shows up in preseason. They got to do a better job of keeping under control. When you come crashing through there, it does you no good to fill the hole if you fly right past it and you don't make the tackle there. But, yeah, not a lot to get. I thought Ike outside, he got hung out to dry, let's face it, by Ryan Clark early on to Santonio Holmes touchdown. But overall, I thought he played a good game. I thought Keenan Lewis had some good tight coverages in there as well, too.
No catches for Stephen Hill.
Yeah, and Ryan Clark was responsible for a big pass defense on Hill early in the game.
By the way, very good point because that changes the complexion of the game. I think that would have made it 14. Would that have made it 14-6?
You're exactly right.
Yeah, that was a big play because, by the way, he was beat, and he did a really good job of getting back and timing it just right. I don't know why he was involved in a single coverage in that type of situation, a post-corner. That was a very good play.
Absolutely. I think when you boil this down, David, Jets 4 of 12 on third down, Steelers 8 of 15. I think you can look at there. I think you can look at the explosive plays that we talked about in this game. And the play of Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, this was by no means a perfect performance by any stretch of the imagination. I thought the defense did play well after the first half with tightening things up. But, hey, go ahead and give Ben Roethlisberger. I even said, kidding on Twitter after the game, I think it was Ben Roethlisberger 27, Jets 10.
Yeah, and how about Mike Tomlin getting all amped up on the sideline? Let's not forget that.
Yeah, some of those woos from PNC Park and the console center kind of carried over there with Tomlin there. But, it's good to see a coach get fired up with the guys because that was right after that back-breaking long drive that resulted in the Redmond touchdown there. So, nothing wrong with that. I mean, it wasn't a complete game. They'll look at the tape. They'll move forward. They got the Raiders this week out west and all, which, on paper looks to be an easier game. But a lot to improve to get ready of coming out of the bye week to take on the Eagles, who are 2-0 playing some pretty horrific football, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of the Ravens game. I heard Michael Vick was very good in the second half of that game in particular. But I'll watch some of the highlights here. Okay, Dave. Anything else to add? We'll be back Wednesday. We'll talk to one of the Oakland beat writers. We'll take a look around the NFL as we like to do on Wednesdays. And if you have some questions or comments you want to get to us, Wednesday's probably a good day for that.
Yeah, we got some good stuff up on Steelers Depot right now. We're looking at the personnel groupings, the early look at that from the Jets game. I've got the breakdown of the runs on first and second down. Moving forward, Ben Roethlisberger, one thing we forgot to say here is he is now, let's see, what was the yardage here? He became the 52nd player to pass for more than 27,000 yards, and he passed Steve Grogan and George Blanda yesterday as well, too. And right now he's not too far behind, I think 900-something yards, I think, behind Terry Bradshaw right now, becoming the Steelers' all-time leading yardage passer, and that probably is going to take place if things stay on this course in the Week 7 game against the Cincinnati Bengals. So quite an accomplishment there. Roethlisberger's done that or will have probably passed him in about 9.5 seasons, what took Bradshaw, 14 seasons to do.
All right. Well, as you've got Dave on Steelers Depot, at Steelers Depot. He passed the 20,000 mark on Twitter the other day, so great stuff following him, and congrats on that, Dave. You can follow me on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can hear me daily on 970 ESPN 2 to 4, and Dave will be joining me Wednesday, as always, and Sunday, as he always does, on Tailgate Talk on the pre-game. So anything else, Dave?
No, take us home.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.